Good afternoon. It is 1:31, November 8th, 2023. This is an informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And this is Randy Christman, Chair of the Commission. I'm joined by Sherry Haugen-Hoffert, the Commissioner, as well as Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, who is joining us on virtually today. I want to emphasize, well, this is an application to modify the service reconnection charge and manual meter reading rider for XL Energy. It is case number PU-23-307. I don't have any opening comments. Sherry, do you?
No, I do not.
Julie, did you?
Sure. I'll just mention for those, I actually am going to be heading out this afternoon to D.C. for FERC to participate in the FERC Reliability Tech Conference tomorrow. And so I'm kind of on the fly. That's why I'm not in the office this afternoon. My apologies for not being there in person, but I am still available to participate and appreciate the opportunity to do it remotely. Thank you.
Okay, before we identify,
and then
go ahead.
I suppose, Randy, are you viewing this as my case?
I think it would be Sherry's case.
It's my case.
Oh, okay, good. It's not gas. Got it. Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah, I remember. Sherry has the electricity. It was the other one that you had retained.
Right. The joke that never gets old. All right, thank you. I have no more opening comments.
And she said it.
She said the words, yeah.
That's why.
So I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed details. If there are disputed details, we'll have to wrap up and issue a notice of hearing. In this case, the applicant will go first. But before we do, for the recording record and anyone who might be listening in, I want everyone in the room to identify themselves with the microphone, please.
Brian Johnson, PSC staff.
Chris Hansen, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Alex Nesbitt, I'm a regulatory policy specialist for XL Energy in North Dakota. And with me on the GoToMeeting line, I should have four individuals from XL Energy in different practice areas. If they could introduce themselves now, that would be great as well. Thank you.
Paul Davis with XL Energy Metering and AMI Operations.
Christopher Barthol on behalf of Exxon Energy. I am a rate consultant covering rates.
Ron Pittman with Xcel Energy. I'm a field operations manager.
Just three. Okay. We might be missing Jody. I think she might join us later potentially.
And Christopher, could you spell your last name? I didn't understand what you said.
Sure, Commissioner Christman. It's Christopher Barthol, and my last name is spelled B as in boy, then A-R-T-H-O-L.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alex, I'll just turn it over to you guys to whoever you want to do this speaking.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, so I want to start off by saying thank you to the commissioners and staff for having me today. This is going to be, and I was at a nice little chat with Chris right beforehand as well. There's going to be a lot of informational aspects of this. Just sort of want to get you a little bit up to speed as far as how the AMI rollout is going. And if you had any other general questions, you could definitely ask it. As far as the actual sort of meat and potatoes of the application, it's just dealing with the service, thank you. It's just dealing with the with tariff revisions as far as the actual charges associated with reconnection of services if somebody's power has been shut off after a very lengthy process, which I'll go through in some of the slides. There's about six substantive slides, and on the back end, there's some appendices as well that sort of lay out a little bit more information as far as the charges and then also our disconnection process. So that'll be sort of the main part as far as what the actual application is, but just thought it'd be valuable when a lot of customers might have questions for you and just sort of wanted to get you up to speed as far as how the rollout is planned to be going in North Dakota and then to some of the benefits that you're going to be seeing. Some of the benefits you'll see in this application that we're discussing today, and then also I watched the Otter Tail hearing, and I think there's lots of discussion about the apps and ways that customers can look at it. So if you had any questions, we could at least briefly discuss that just sort of for your benefit in case you get questions from ratepayers. So with that, looking at the first slide here, we have begun installing the FAN, the Field Area Network. That's what needs to be deployed ahead of the AMI meters to make sure that they can properly communicate with each other. So that has already been going on. That started in April of 2023. And as far as the actual installation of the AMI meters, that's going to begin in the first quarter of 2024. In our prior filing that we had, we went into sort of the notification process as part of this whole rollout. So people have already been getting, I think, the 90-day notices, and then as it's getting closer to the time when they're actually get installed, they'll get further notifications via, I think it's phone, email, and if you do have any more sort of substantive questions on the rollout, hopefully somebody on the phone can answer those. But that's just kind of where we're at right now, is that we're going to be starting the rollout in earnest, actually installing the meters in the first quarter of 2024, and should be having those all completed, the installation be complete by the end of 2025. That point is important for this filing just because when we look at the actual tariff revisions that we're seeking, there's a $50 reconnection charge that won't be bumped up until 2026 for people that have opted out, just because that's sort of, we're going to leave it be until everybody's had their meters installed, which will be in 2026.
Quick question.
Yep.
Do you have anyone, just from your early interactions with customers, have you had anybody already request to opt out of this or heard anything at all from customers in that regard?
In North Dakota, I haven't heard anything. I know we might have some percentages in our other jurisdictions. I don't know if anybody on the line could speak to those that we've seen so far.
Yes, I can. This is Paul Davis. Commissioner Fedorchak, we have not had any opt-outs in North Dakota yet. We are running about 0.6 of 1% in opt-outs in our four states that we're currently deploying meters.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question to that. So what are you guys doing to communicate and engage your customers on this, that why this AMI meter is so important and stuff like that? What are you doing regarding your customer engagement and stuff like that to really get the information out there?
I think
so. There's several avenues that we are using. I'll go ahead and take this one. There's several avenues that we are using. Pre-install of the AMI meter, we do a 90-day bill on cert, and that's what has started, as mentioned earlier. At 60 days, we do a postcard to the customer. All the communications pre-install include information on opt-out and where to call about opting out. At 30 days, they receive either an email or a letter, depending on their preference for contacting with us. And then a week ahead before installation, we do a robocall to the customer. At the time of installation, if the installation is successful, if we have access and can install the meter, we then leave a door hanger that has information on where to go online with Xcel Energy or who to call for more information about the smart meter.
So what percentage of your North Dakota customers do you think have received at least the first of those notices?
It would be a very small percentage at this time. I'm sorry that I don't have an actual number, but we will be starting the rollout here in the first quarter. It'll be a slow start, as we've done in all of our other territories, to make sure that the training, the installers are fully trained. They will be doing their field training in January and installing meters at that time, but it will only be a few meters a day as they do the field training. So those are the people that would have received the 90-day notice at this time. An estimate would probably be less than 1,000.
So you're not doing anything as far as a demonstration or anything, just kind of the generic, as always, mailers, postcards, nothing to bring somebody in and see the AMI meters, how they work, or anything like that?
No, we are not at this time.
So one of the benefits that we're going to see with these AMI meters is the remote capabilities that they have. If you are having an AMI meter installed, it will have an internal switch that has two-way communication capabilities. Within the context of this tariff revision that we're seeking, what you're immediately seeing is just it no longer means that there's a need for physical people to physically appear at the premises to disconnect or reconnect a meter. So with that, you'll see substantial cost savings for customers that have had their meters turned off and that need to be turned back on again. And another thing that's also a benefit in this instance is the fact that if somebody, say, does go through all the processes and we eventually do turn somebody's power off, if they notify us in the morning, and the power usually will get turned off in the morning, that means that if that happens, they can contact us immediately during the day. We'll answer the phone. We also have a 24/7 line. But if it usually the disconnections will always happen in the morning, and then if they contact us with the new remote capabilities, a benefit of that would be that they can have it turned back on that afternoon if a payment is made in full or a payment arrangement is made. So that's sort of one of the other benefits that we're seeing. This is just the cost savings associated with not having to make the field visit to the premise as far as the disconnection and reconnection. And that's what will get me to this next slide, which is really sort of the bulk of what the tariff revisions that we're looking at. As it stands right now, as it's stated in our tariff, if somebody's power does get turned off, that would require a physical service reconnection. And with that, there would be a $50 service fee charge for restoration of service. As we note there, this fee was established in 2010, and it's no longer cost-based. The cost for employees to make the calls, and then also the field visits associated with the disconnection or reconnection, that charge is no longer accurately capturing those costs. And that's where these tariff modifications are going to come in. The first one that you're seeing is a charge of $13.50. That's the proposed reconnection charge for residential customers with a standard AMI meter. And as we said, so if you do have an AMI, one of the new meters, that will mean that if your service is disconnected and it now has to be reconnected, instead of the old $50 charge, it'll be $13.50 due to the remote capabilities of reconnecting it. There's no longer the requirement that a field personnel would have to attend to do that in person.
So most of the cost savings there are from that field person?
Correct, yeah.
So you arrived at that time looking at an average time that it took a field rep. How did you come to that?
Yeah, I defer to Chris. If you you want to get into the methodology a bit, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Commissioner Hogan-Hoffert. So what we did was we looked at, as Alex said, the call costs, and then we will still need to make field visits to customers where under two scenarios where we would not have the correct contact information of those customers. So, and then also we made an estimate that 3% of our customer, 3% of the time the remote disconnect switch will not function properly. Therefore, we will have to send someone out to disconnect them. And then so the, when once we've sent someone out to disconnect those 18% of customers, the 15% is we will now have the correct contact information from sending someone out, and therefore we won't have to send someone back out to reconnect them. We can use the switch to reconnect those customers. And so basically the cost that we look at our cost of labor to send out field personnel to conduct those disconnections and reconnections.
So that $1,350 is, okay, right there, cost column field rep. And you looked at, well, less, that $9.10 has to be less than an hour, obviously.
Huh? Yes, so the $9.10.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, I think we estimate, I don't remember how much time we estimate. I want to say it was maybe 20 to 30 minutes to send someone out to disconnect and reconnect them. But this is just, these costs are just associated with sending people out for only 18% of the customers who can be disconnected remotely.
So let me repeat that back. You have 18% of your customers who are disconnected for some reason. No, I mean, that's high. That's really high. How did you arrive at the 18%?
So 18% of the 18% of the customers with remote disconnect switches, they will, of that 18%, 15% we estimate that we will not be able to contact them to let them know that they are at risk of being disconnected.
Because you don't have correct customer information.
Correct.
Okay.
And then 3% of the time, 3% of the time we estimate that the switch will not function properly. So 18% of the total cost of sending out field personnel.
Okay, thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
What?
Okay, great.
I have a couple of follow-ups.
I have a quick follow-up.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, was that you,
Julie?
Victor?
You're fine. Go ahead.
All right. I guess this makes me question, is the service reconnection fee, is it traditionally a cost-based fee? I guess I would have assumed that there's some sort of a penalty built into that as a deterrent for people and an incentive for them to pay the bill. So help me understand the desire to get this, you know, down so low to be actual cost-based. Because we're talking about customers who get disconnected for not paying their bills, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the current charge is $50, and those we, as Alex said, we established that in 2010, and the majority those costs were also associated with calling customers and notifying them that they're at risk of being disconnected, and then also sending out field personnel. So currently we have to send out field personnel to all customers to disconnect and reconnect them. And
yeah, I got that. I guess my question is, like more philosophical. I get how you're doing it, but is it always a, is it traditionally a cost of service type of thing, a reconnection fee for people who aren't paying? Or could you really set it up whatever, you know, we would support just as a, to cover your costs, yes, but also as a deterrent to getting disconnected. Do you see what I'm saying? And Victor, if you guys have thoughts on that, I'd be interested in hearing yours too from a rate-making standpoint.
So from a rate-making standpoint, I like cost-based things. However, I don't disagree with your thought process. The one concern I'll raise would be one similar to like a insufficient funds payment. You know, we not with NSP, with another company, we had gone around on that topic. So someone who is not, who's being disconnected because of not being able to pay the bill, likely has enough financial problems that you don't need to throw extra ones on top of them.
Right. So
that was kind of my thought process with a non-cost-based or much higher insufficient funds charge. Again, in a different proceeding with a different company. I just wanted to kind of bring that context in here a little bit. So, but I don't disagree. I think it partially exists to be a disincentive for customers not to pay their bill and to keep current.
Right.
But again, with that being said, I do like cost-based rates. They're nice.
I don't disagree. I like cost-based rates too. I also... though think like $13.50, I worry that, I mean, that's not a disincentive at all to, like, if you get that notice, oh, you're going to get disconnected, and you're thinking, oh, I owe $200 or $400 or whatever it is, and then I'm going to have to pay another $50 or whatever it is to get reconnected, it makes you think. If you don't, if it's $13, you might be like, whatever. But I guess that's a little off topic and something that we could probably think about separately. So I don't want to belabor the point.
Well, just to add to that, Julie, I think that goes to one of my questions for this type of charge when we go back to, when you go further on in your presentation, the $100 mm-hmm. for the other one. So there seems an imbalance. So you can proceed as we get to that.
Sure. So my questions are slightly different than what Julie had there. So on an average year, what percentage or what count of customers in North Dakota are disconnected? Do we have a rough, I'm not looking for an exact number to tie down, but just kind of a rough, even if you have it for your whole system, I think that would be similar to your North Dakota numbers on a percentage basis.
Don, do you have that or would that be a Paul?
Sorry, my apologies. Took me just a minute there. Typically in North Dakota, we disconnect less than 13% of the eligible customers. That's overall. In North Dakota, we actually probably do a little bit higher than that just because of the staffing that we have and the central location. But realistically, less than 13% of our customers are disconnected overall.
I'm not sure I'm following. So you're saying 13% of customers who should be disconnected actually are. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, 13% that have received a disconnection notice and are eligible for disconnection, about 13% of them.
Okay. But how about the overall? So of your total customer base in North Dakota, how many of those on average are disconnected over the course of a given year?
That I don't have the answer for.
I guess just based on the reports I've seen, I'm assuming that number is somewhere in the 1 to 2,000 per year range overall. So, I mean, we're talking 1 to 2%.
That would be accurate, yes.
Okay. So with that in mind, do you anticipate needing additional staff for the call center portion of these costs to take those or to handle those disconnect calls, or would the existing staff be handling it?
The majority of our customers are able to self-serve through the IVR if they want to, but my understanding is that we are not anticipating the need to any more staffing. We are able to throttle how many people we disconnect, and we do take into consideration the staffing that we have available to answer those calls and make sure we don't exceed that threshold.
Okay. How about in general, is there a separate group of staff that only deal with customer disconnects for non-payment types of issues?
We have a credit contact center that deal with our credit customers. So if they do call in, they are routed to the credit side of our contact center versus the residential side.
Okay. So then in general, the residential side, which is probably the higher percentage of the disconnects, would just be handled by any of the customer service representatives, not anyone specific within that group.
I apologize. Maybe I misspoke there. So we have a residential contact center that handles our day-to-day calls, our start service, our billing questions, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then we have our credit call center, where our customers that have past due balances are routed to when they call in to discuss their past due bills and ways to avoid disconnections, get reconnected, things like that.
Okay. That's helpful.
I just want to make a little announcement here. We're on page 4 of 13, and we've used about 2/3 of the time that we've kind of allotted to this case, and we do have another case with another company this afternoon. No hard stop or start time, but in fairness to them, we can't go way long unless staff is making some other arrangements with the other company.
No, appreciate the time check on that. That's all I had on that kind of topic in general. I was just trying to explore the idea of, are these the costs you're proposing for this disconnect, are they based on actual additional costs or costs of running the existing system? I guess that was kind of my point with my last questioning. So thank you for indulging me.
Thank you for the time reminder. I only have the first 6 slides or 7 slides are the substantive ones. The back ones are appendix, and we're organically getting to everything that I wanted to cover anyway. You've read ahead and done your homework, I think. So I think, and we've largely covered this slide, which is the $100, and that's just another cost rate that we're seeing that's increased.
Kind of inflation from 10 to 24.
So 13 years, 14 years.
Correct, yeah. And so as far as, the timing of the tariff modifications, we would look for it to take effect upon commission approval. But as far as when customers would actually see these new charges, would be when it actually takes effect for them. So as soon as somebody has an AMI meter, if they have a new style AMI meter and they were disconnected at that point in time and reconnected, then it would be the $13.50. So there's sort of a window of 2024 to 2026 where a customer could potentially see these tariff revisions. And nobody will see the new, if you're an opt-out customer or if you're a polyphase customer that doesn't have the internal switch, you won't see that new $100 charge until 2026 is the way that the tariff is laid out. And that's giving time just for the full installation process to run its course. There won't be a $100 charge in that time. But as soon as you get an AMI meter, if you don't opt out or if you don't have one of the meters without an internal switch in it, then you would start seeing that $13.50 charge potentially in 2024, 2025 is the way that we've laid the tariff proposed modifications. So that's really kind of all that we're looking at as far as this entire filing is just, the cause nature associated with that. And it's a good discussion that we had as far as the philosophy around it, penalty aspect versus cost causation. I know different jurisdictions have different thoughts, and very happy to have this discussion with everybody. And we've already, onto this slide, the service disconnection process, we've talked about it a little bit. I'd say the main thing that's going to happen here that's different is that obviously is the fact that this is remote. Now we just have an additional step of an extra call in there, since there potentially would not be a knock on the door, a field visit for somebody. But if we can't get a hold of them, it's going to, I think we might still end up having to go there anyway. And I think that that's captured in that 18% that Chris was speaking of. We're sort of baking in a little bit of extra charge where not everybody will be able to be turned off remotely. That's what that 18% is intended to capture. You can jump in, Chris, if I mischaracterized it. But that's my understanding, is that we wanted to put some of those charges in there. We're not going to be able to remotely disconnect everybody. There might need to still be some field visits, either due to wrong information or just not being able to physically get a hold of them. And then also, as I talked about, one additional benefit is that if it's finally the thing that sort of spurs somebody on to either get in a payment plan or get caught up in full, we'll turn the power off in the morning and then just flip a switch and it'll be back on that afternoon, which is nice, cold weather, hot days, things of that nature. That's definitely a benefit associated with the remote capabilities. This is just going into the process. It's a lengthy and extensive process. It's always sort of a last resort that we like to use to actually disconnect people's electricity. So it'll be 9 weeks worth of calls, potential for, it's emails, and it's depending on the contact that the customer is usually getting, but it's emails, calls, everything like that leading up to disconnection, and then try to get them back on as quickly as possible, which is nice with that reconnection that we have. So with that, sort of the general discussion, I know Jody, her and I have had some discussions. The company as a whole is rolling out an app. There's more information online. I think that's sort of going to be one thing. I know just watching in other proceedings, the questions as far as being able to actively monitor your usage. You're still able to go out and look at the meter. You can get a reading on it, but some people can be able to, there's an app that's available where you can go on the website and you can see, if you're in your house, you can see up to the minute usage. And then there's 15-minute increments, things of that nature. So be able to see in real time your usage, get more price signals, things of that nature as far as how efficient your house is. So that'll be sort of one benefit that's going to be coming. But it's sort of in the early phases. There's a lot of people in the company working on that. But that'll just be something that's going to be valuable on a go-forward basis. So.
I have a question. I want to go back to that $100 reconnect charge.
Yep.
On how that's arrived at. Because when I look at our approval on PU22180 on the meter reading for $10 a month.
Yep.
So that's just do the meter reading, okay? And we came to, that was the order we agreed upon. So you're going out there to reconnect. The old meter's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a manual thing, I understand. But it's going up $50.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at that manual reading charge versus, the reconnect, give me some rationale for the inflationary cost.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. I don't know if somebody, just looking at, I know a big part, sort of the batch nature, the scheduling, everything else like that that would go with the fact that you would have a designated person going out on that time, sort of set in place. That's why the $10 would be lower than this one, where it'd be someone, it's an unexpected expense. It wouldn't have been properly set up in any sort of schedule. The services, the hourly charges, everything else like that, it wouldn't be properly set forth in a way for cost-saving measures.
But going to have to do those same steps to send somebody out to do a meter reading.
I think that there's economies of scale with the meter reading the meter reading one was a little bit before I caught the tail end of it, but I think we're all the IT that goes into that, and also just the fact that we're able, I think it's generally one person that's going to be solely tasked with that, and they're able to go from house to house and be able to do it relatively efficiently as compared to this one reconnection. If it were to happen, it would be maybe that in person's, I don't know, an hour or a couple hours, something like that, as compared to being able to do it just more efficient. But if anybody on the phone has sort of a better explanation than that.
I can help with that. You're actually on the right path. So our meter reads, they're scheduled and they're in routes. So they're scheduled by location. So we can send one person to an area and cover a vast majority of the meter reads that we need. Whereas with a reconnection, we're sending them, we may be sending them from one area to another area. So they're not as efficient. There's a lot of windshield time in between them. So the time allotted for those is much higher for a reconnection than, say, a meter reader who is going to an area and covering a large number of properties rather than just the one.
This is Chris Hansen with staff. I have a quick question. So for the manual meter reading, is that all going to be basically going to the meter and reading the meter, or do you have some of those that are on Wi-Fi where they just drive by? Are you, because I know there is that capability, so are we assuming that all of these are ones where they're going to have to get out of their truck and go read the meter, or is there some other capability that might be not your full AMI, but there might be Wi-Fi readability?
So in North Dakota, our gas meters will be read by drive-by eventually once we get them converted over. But for our electric meters, when we have to go out and get a manual read for them, we actually have to probe the meter. So we'll have to go up to the meter to be able to get that interval data from it.
Okay.
I have another question. You indicated with AMI, you would do the disconnects in the morning and could potentially hopefully reconnect by the afternoon. Those with the old meters, I understand the windshield time and all that. How do you do that if that has to be manually disconnected, correct? Mm-hmm. And are they done in the morning? And so if they have the same, I understand distance and time and route and all that, but how do you balance that as far as customer service and some of those disconnects between the AMI meter and the old meters if they opt out?
Yeah, I think it's generally next day, but you have somebody on the line wanted to expand a bit.
That's correct. For a manual disconnection, we do complete all those before noon, even today with the manual ones, and then they are just reconnected by next business day. So if we disconnect you on a Monday, you would be reconnected by end of day on Tuesday.
If nobody had any other questions on this, I have a separate question, but we were talking about, you're saying currently you only disconnect about 13% of the past due accounts, and that was that due to staffing? I mean, what happens to those accounts that you don't get to? Do they eventually catch themselves back up? Or explain what that means to me in practical terms, or does somebody go a year without paying? I mean, what does that percentage mean?
So 13% is across all of my area. I'm not exactly certain on what our numbers are for North Dakota. But yeah, the ones that we don't get to, it's typically either an access issue or it's a timing issue or a staffing issue.
Okay, so if I'm late and you've sent a bill and it says you're late and you're going to be, and then you send the one to say you're going to be disconnected, you're saying only about 1 in 7.5 of those ever get disconnected? Or if that person doesn't catch that thing up in a month or 2 months or 3 months, do you eventually get around to disconnecting them? Or what happens?
We typically get around to them. Again, there are some that we don't have access to get to, and so we're not able to get them. But we always focus on the higher balance. Okay. So if a customer owes us $200, we may not get to them, So by the time they get up to that $500, there's a better chance that we're going to get them because we're looking at that higher dollar value.
Okay. So eventually everybody gets disconnected at some point if they let it go long enough.
How about the access issue ones? Like that one is the one I can see being a problem where, you know, if the customer has figured out that little scheme and they just stop paying their bill, like, well, they're not going to come in my house and disconnect. And if I don't let them in, have you had any of those kind of situations?
Yeah, they're pretty common. A lot of times we'll get duplexes that have a shared meter where one side will pay, the other side won't. We have customers that do have the meters inside. It can be something as simple as tying their dog up to their meter. So we can see the meter, we just can't get them because we're not going to get them.
That's good. I like that one.
Accident. You meant to say accidentally not tied their dog to the meter, right?
So, refresh my memory on this. Do you have, what's your criteria for those that cannot opt out again? Do you have, like, those that have missed, like, payments? Do you have, what's that criteria again?
I think Ottertail had that. I don't recall.
I know. I've just seen if they have established. That's why I said refresh. Have you established?
Someone else.
So like those that have a meter inside, are you, I'm just curious if you've set criteria like other companies have on not being able to opt out, like if they've been behind on two or more payments, if they have a meter inside, if.
Yeah, sorry. Yep.
No, I was going to say, I know we have some opt-out criteria, but I don't know that it has to do with, like, how far past due they are. If there's tamper issues, if there's safety issues, and somebody else could probably give the other criteria for those opt-outs.
Have we received that info? I don't remember reading that for you.
I don't recall seeing it.
I believe it might have been in PU 22-180, just in my research for this matter, but I think it's, yeah, the tampering, and then I think it might be a location issue, might be one.
I could go look.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other questions on this case? Not hearing any. Are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record? And that would include the slides as well as the recording of the oral discussion?
None from staff.
No. None from staff.
None from the company.
Okay. So the evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record on this case? Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. I thought these meetings went from 3:30 to 4:30. I never know if you.